Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Last year, I was here talking about rebalancing our economy towards savings and exports and getting the government's finances in order. Our budget 2011 continues that plan because these are critical building blocks to building a strong economy. So I'll set out the main features of the budget, how it sets out a faster path to surplus, funds the government's share of rebuilding Christchurch, and builds a platform for faster economic growth and higher national savings. And like our previous budgets, it does this while continuing to protect the most vulnerable and supporting families. In Budget 2011, we will fund the costs of the earthquake and return the government's books to surplus in 2014-15. In 4 years' time, that is, a year earlier than previously forecast. This budget sets the government apart from those to the left of us who want to borrow more and spend money we simply don't have, and those to the right of us who want to slash public spending and dismantle programs on which many New Zealanders rely. The government rejects both of those prescriptions. This is a balanced and responsible budget. We've made considerable progress in this budget to move from a record deficit of $16.7 billion in the current year to a healthy surplus in 4 years' time. This year's deficit includes around $6 billion of costs relating to the Canterbury earthquakes. These costs are large, but they are one-off. Combined with the savings that we've achieved in this budget, this means that the deficit reduces by about a third to $9.7 billion next year and is almost eliminated by 2013. By 2014-15, that's 4 years from now, we will be running a surplus of $1.3 billion and starting to repay debt. As recently as Budget 2009, the surplus was 9 years away. As the Savings Working Group has said, getting back to surplus faster is one of the most important things the government can do to increase national savings. Our surplus has given governments choices and provide a buffer against future unexpected events. When you look back at the situation we inherited before we took action in the 2009 budget, that's the dotted red line on the chart, Treasury was forecasting never-ending deficits. Our budget 2009 turned this prediction around, and each successive budget we have made progress to returning the books to surplus. The forecasts today show us with a healthy surplus in 2014-15, while at the same time we have absorbed the costs of the Christchurch earthquakes. And we'd like to think that in future budgets we can make progress to getting back to surplus soon. Funding the government's share of rebuilding Christchurch leads to more debt in the short term, as shown by the gold line on the graph. The costs of the earthquake are largely accounted for in this year and next. So net government debt is forecast to peak at 29.6% of GDP in 2014-15, and then fall consistently to the low 20% range by the early 2020s. If we had continued with the policy settings we had in place last year, without the decisions we've made in this budget, but including the cost of the earthquake, net debt would have peaked at around 35%, which we believe for a country with among the highest foreign liabilities in the world was simply too high. Supporting the people of Canterbury and rebuilding Christchurch is a major goal of government. Christchurch is our second largest city, a major industrial and tourism hub. It's essential to the performance of the whole economy. Our estimate of the damage from the two earthquakes is about $15 billion, or equivalent of 8% of GDP. To put this in context, the Japanese tragedy has caused damage equivalent to 3 to 5% of Japan's GDP. In fact, it's difficult to find a natural disaster that's had a bigger impact on any country. The direct impact on Crown expenses from the two earthquakes we estimate at around $8.8 billion. This includes $3.3 billion for EQC and ACC, and $5.5 billion for central government's costs. And central government's direct costs will cover our share of the local government infrastructure, roads, insurance excesses for schools, hospitals, temporary housing, and other policy responses such as the employment and support subsidy. The government is establishing the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Fund to account for our share of the costs. Most of the funds will be spent in the next 2 years, and this fund provides reassurance to the people of Christchurch that the government has the resources committed to the rebuilding of their city. The fund itself will ensure transparency and control over the costs of the rebuilding. I now want to move on to the forecast of growth in the economy. As you already know, growth in the current year has taken a hit from the cost of the earthquakes and from slower growth in the economy. We've also seen New Zealanders changing their savings habits. So they are saving more and spending less. And while in the short term this has caused some pain, particularly for retail and service sectors, in the long run it is the right direction for building a platform for strong growth. There are signs that the economy is moving on to more sustainable footing. Households and businesses are getting their balance sheets in order, reducing their debt. Strong growth in emerging markets has given us a period of high prices for our exports, and we expect that to be sustained to some degree. New Zealand's terms of trade are at their highest level in several decades, and our strong links to Australia and China, the world's two best performing economies, are also a cause for optimism. We believe the Rugby World Cup will provide some boost to the economy, and certainly the rebuilding of Christchurch will significantly increase activity in 2012 and beyond. So the forecasts show economic growth rising to 4% in 2012-13. That's the highest level since 2004. And these forecasts show an average of 3% growth over the next 3 or 4 years. We believe that a number of the decisions we have taken, along with the resilience of New Zealanders, are the reason why we can now expect over the next 4 years a period of reasonable and sustained economic growth. What this adds up to is around 170,000 new jobs by 2015, with the unemployment rate falling below 5% by the end of next year. At the same time, household disposable incomes are forecast to rise, with an average growth of about 4% over the next 4 years. And many New Zealanders will be looking forward to what, over the next year or so, what may be their first significant pay increase in a number of years. Inflation is forecast to remain below 3% as the one-off impact of GST falls out. This relatively low inflation, combined with the government's robust expenditure control, means that interest rates, which are the single biggest cost in home-owning households, are likely to stay lower for longer. As I've mentioned, the government is tightening the reins on government spending. In practical terms, this means that over the next few years, the government will borrow about $10 billion less than would have been the case. And I'll just take you through those figures. We had previously planned $1.1 billion a year of new spending. That's what we set out in the last summer. Over the four-year period, that is $4.4 billion of new spending. However, instead of spending $4.4 billion extra, this budget finds net savings of $1.2 billion over the next 4 years. So we'll spend $5.6 billion less than we had previously expected, and that is $5.6 billion less that the government will be borrowing. We'll also look harder at our capital spending and look to reallocate existing taxpayer-owned capital to higher priorities. In this budget, we are confirming that we intend to extend the mixed ownership model to four state-owned energy companies, as well as reducing the government's majority share in New Zealand. The Prime Minister set out these propositions earlier in the year. This is likely to happen over a 3 to 5 year programme, starting in 2012, with the government retaining a majority stake, that is at least 51%, in all companies, and Kiwi investors being at the front of the queue for shares. Now, this is expected to free up between $5 and $7 billion, which will be redeployed into other areas of government investment. Even that amount won't meet all our capital needs. Crown assets will increase by, in gross terms by Crown assets will increase in gross terms by $78 billion by 2015. Most of this is in SOEs and Crown financial institutions. About $21 billion of it will be within central government. So the $5 to $7 billion proceeds from the mixed ownership model will be used to fund about one-third of what the government expects to invest over the next 5 years in schools, hospitals, better broadband, rebuilding Kiwi Rail. So the $5.6 billion of operating savings that I talked about and the proceeds from the mixed ownership model mean that we will borrow about $10 billion less than we would have needed to otherwise. As you are aware, the government has been borrowing net $380 million per week in the last financial year. This budget will see net borrowing drop from $380 million per week to $100 million per week on average over the next 3 years. That substantially reduces our vulnerability to international financial markets. Just to remind you about the mixed ownership model, earlier this year the government set out 5 tests that we believe needed to be met before we could extend the model to SOEs. The Treasury has advised the government that those tests can be met. We will be seeking a mandate in the 2011 election, and the programme would start in 2012 if we receive that mandate. As I've said, the government will retain a majority stake. New Zealand investors will be at the front of the queue. We would also expect that KiwiSaver funds and the Crown's own investment arms, New Zealand Super Fund and ACC, would become stable long-term holders of shares in these assets. We've taken a number of steps to ensure that large government programs such as KiwiSaver, Working for Families and Student Loans are better targeted and financially sustainable. First, let me outline the changes to KiwiSaver. KiwiSaver has nearly 1.7 million members and is gaining 20,000 new members per month. KiwiSaver balances are currently just under $8 billion. Of this $8 billion, $3.5 billion has been directly contributed by government. In the next few months, the government will contribute another $1 billion directly into individual KiwiSaver accounts. However, that contribution makes little difference to national savings. It helps individuals to save for their retirement. But to pay for it, the government is borrowing the money mainly from foreigners. We want to lift national savings. So in this budget, we are increasing the level of private savings and reducing the amount of money the government is borrowing to put into the scheme. You will be familiar with the main changes, which are a reduction in the member tax credit to 50 cents in the dollar and an increase in employee and employer contributions to 3% from 1 April 2013. The combined impact of these changes will see KiwiSaver inflows growing strongly over the next 4 years, but funded more from private savings and less from the government. Officials advise that this will result in a modest increase in national savings and a reduction in the amount the country owes to foreign lenders. We are committed to a successful KiwiSaver scheme, and the KiwiSaver remains an attractive scheme for New Zealanders. The government will contribute $650 million into individual KiwiSaver accounts in July next year, if we are re-elected, and the government will contribute $2.5 billion into KiwiSaver individual accounts over the next 4 years. That is a good deal. Now, these changes put KiwiSaver on a sound footing. On current projections, the funds will total around $25 billion by 2015 and nearly $60 billion by 2021. We've also made changes to better target working for families to lower income families and put the scheme on a more sustainable footing. Working for families was designed in good times. And you can see here how the cost has almost tripled, in fact, since 2005, from just on $1 billion to just under $3 billion. This scheme is important to families. One of the reasons we have a large deficit is because the government has continued to fund the growth in working for families through a recession when families face the pressures of wage cuts, job insecurity, and tight incomes. However, to make it sustainable, we want to target it better and to hold the total cost of KiwiSaver. The changes we're proposing will be phased in over 7 years. They are relatively small changes that take place as the family tax credit rates are increased for inflation. The changes today represent about a 4% trimming of the scheme, bringing its annual cost down to $2.6 billion by 2015 from $2.8 billion today. Lower income families and beneficiaries are largely unaffected by these changes. Beyond that, it's difficult to say with certainty how the changes will affect individual families, as the amount they receive from 1 year to the next depends on a range of factors. Whether there is any change in their income, for instance, as people's incomes rise, if working for families entitlement decreases. Whether any of their children have moved into different categories. The payments for children change at the age of 13 and the age of 16, and depend on whether the child is a first child or a subsequent child. How much a family gets depends on whether a child's got a job, gone on a benefit, left home, turned 18, or are no longer at school. For most families, the changes in the age of their children and the income of the parents will have more of an impact on your entitlement than the budget changes. About three quarters of Working for Families recipients will get an increase in their payments on the 1st of April 2012. Of the other quarter, about 80% earn over $60,000 a year. They will receive slightly less or no longer qualify. The average loss among that quarter of families will be about $4 per week. The largest losses will be among those with children aged 16 or 17, with no younger children. Bearing in mind that at the lower incomes, the families with a, say, one child aged 17 is receiving about $150 a week and Working for Families. When that child turns 18 or leaves school or gets a job, that family loses all of their entitlement under the scheme as it currently exists. In most cases, the losses will be, as I said, around an average of $4, with a maximum of around $15 a week. The budget also changes student loans. While keeping the scheme interest-free, we've tightened the lending criteria, so the scheme is better focused on those who really need assistance. We expect these changes to save about $450 million between now and 2015. This year, the Crown will still lend almost $1.6 billion to students, up 50% compared to 5 years ago. There are currently $12 billion of loans outstanding. So again, these are relatively small changes to eligibility for the scheme. I now want to talk about the public sector. The public sector is the equivalent of around a quarter of the economy, so it has a very important role in lifting productivity, because when we provide more services for less, we're contributing to the general productivity of the economy, and if the government is spending less, we're increasing national savings. So it's a quarter of the economy over which government has direct influence. Over the past 2 years, we've worked hard to provide taxpayers with value for money. This budget seeks nearly $1 billion of savings from the public sector over 3 years, starting from 1 July 2012. We expect these savings to come largely from back office functions, freeing up money for improving frontline services. Over that 3 years, the government will have a total public sector spend of $106 billion. So $1 billion of savings represents roughly 1% of the public sector spend over that 3 years. Now, these savings are part of ongoing improvement, where the government has worked closely with public agencies to improve services. And I have to say that the tightening up in the public sector is simply the government beginning to do what households and businesses have had to do over the last 2 or 3 years. At the same time as we're making considerable savings in order to get back to surplus in 4 years, the government has also committed in this budget to new public spending. The health sector will receive $1.7 billion of new funding. A further $500 million has been reprioritised for a total of $2.2 billion. This includes a wide range of initiatives, such as care for first-time mothers, wider access to medicines, additional elective surgery, more resources for patients with dementia, increased disability support services, and training more doctors. We remain committed to further raising standards in education, and we provided $1.4 billion for schools and early childhood. This builds on the past 2 years' investment in growing early childhood, implementing national standards, and beginning the youth guarantee. Through the last two budgets, the government has continued with a wide-ranging investment in infrastructure. And today we will be allocating a further $942 million to ultra-fast broadband, with the conclusion of the contractual negotiations now in sight. We're also allocating a further tranche of $250 million towards KiwiRail's $4.5 billion turnaround plan. These budget investments sit alongside an ongoing program of $1 billion a year on state highway improvements. This budget is focusing on increasing national savings and improving the investment environment. We have seen New Zealanders changing their habits and saving more. Last year's tax changes pushed in the same direction by reducing tax on savings and investment and increasing tax on consumption. This budget reinforces that push by getting back to surplus faster and increasing the private savings proportion of KiwiSaver. And both of these will lift national savings. But we also need to look ahead and get into a better investment environment. Investors need confidence to invest in quality, reliable investments. This year we'll see the government complete the re-regulation of our financial markets, began 4 years ago. This includes the creation of the Financial Markets Authority, an overhaul of our securities law, a new regulatory framework for the insurance sector, new regulation for financial advisors and financial products, and prudential supervision of what used to be called finance companies and are now called non-bank deposit takers. The government has a keen interest in strengthening capital markets. The mixed ownership model is part of the government's push to improve and deepen our capital markets. We'll also be issuing earthquake Kiwi bonds that will help our local capital markets. And the Debt Management Office will issue a new long-dated inflation index bond to meet the demand of long-term investors. Alongside that, the local government funding agency will start operating later this year with the legislation introduced in the House this week. We've talked about rebalancing the economy since 2008. There are a number of ways of measuring progress. This graph is simply one of them. It shows the household debt to income ratios. And where we have seen through the last 15 or 16 years, in fact longer than that, a steady increase in that ratio. Since 2007, New Zealanders have put the brakes on their borrowing. There are other measures of progress. Household savings rates are moving into positive territory for the first time in a long time, and gross national savings rates are the highest they have been in 20 years. The government wants to lock in these positive changes in savings behaviour. We intend to do further work on the savings group recommendations, such as the possibility of a one-off KiwiSaver enrolment exercise where over a short period of time everyone is enrolled in, and looking where there are benefits in changing further the tax treatment of savers. So to sum up, Budget 2011 marks the next steps in the government's program outlined in Budget 2009 to tilt the economy towards export savings and investments and away from borrowing and consumption. We have set out a faster path to a healthy surplus in 2014-15, a year sooner than expected last year. At the same time, we are meeting the significant costs of the Christchurch earthquake. Over the next 4 years, we will borrow $10 billion less than we would otherwise have needed to, and weekly net borrowing will drop from $380 million a week to $100 million per week. So the budget lifts national savings by, with all these measures. The budget achieves all of this while continuing to protect the most vulnerable New Zealanders increasing investment in health and education, and establishing a multi-billion dollar recovery fund to help pay for the rebuilding of Christchurch. It is a balanced and responsible budget for the times, but more importantly, it continues with the government's longer term program of lifting our economic performance, and we see signs of success in that with the prospect of 3 or 4 years of sustainable and consistent growth in the New Zealand economy. I'll now take your questions.